We are going to call the December 6, 2023 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District to order. And Director Corona, would you like to lead us in the flag salute this morning? We could all stand.
Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If I could ask the Board Secretary to read the rules for virtual participation and then take a roll call of the Board and legal counsel.
Yes. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again, and please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. And now we will do roll call. President Pauly.
Present.
Director Corona.
Here.
Director Slauson.
Here.
Director Armstrong.
Here.
Director Record.
Here.
And our legal counsel is present.
Thank you very much. Item 1 is public comments. Do we have anybody wishing to do public comments for any item not on the agenda this morning? See none. I know we have some public comment later in the meeting for agendized items. See none for general matter. We will move on to item 2, which is our executive reports. And Mr. Mawad.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. Under new and ongoing items, I wanted to update the board on the condition of our employee who has recently suffered a serious injury. As you're aware, on November 17th, one of our employees who's part of the sewer collection maintenance crew was struck by a hit-and-run driver who later was apprehended. The employee is recovering at home, and our team has been coordinating closely with him as well as his family to make sure he is receiving the care that he needs to recover. In addition, we have made the employee assistance program available for anyone who wishes to utilize that service within the work group. Also, our risk risk management staff has retained the services of Watchman Safety Consulting. They are an independent third party who has come in to look at not only the particulars and the specifics of the incident that occurred, but also holistically look at our practices and safety protocols when it comes to having our employees work in the public right of way. We're going to continue working with Watchman Safety to understand better what additional steps, if any, we could take to make sure that safety of our staff and our team is of utmost priority. We have not yet been contacted by Cal OSHA Enforcement Division, but we anticipate that we'll be having those conversations, those meetings here very soon. Once we have additional details and a full report from Watchman Safety, we will be further briefing the board on the findings and recommendations. Next, I wanted to share with the board, as you may have heard, on December 1st last week, the Department of Water Resources announced a allocation of 10% along the state water project for 2024. This is the first allocation announcement for the year. It comes on the heel of having 100% allocation in 2023, so it is quite a change in conditions. We do anticipate this is an initial allocation, and as you're all aware, that allocation is updated on a regular basis. The next announcement by DWR will be in late this month. However, with the low allocation announced last week, Metropolitan has taken certain steps operationally. They have, in fact, changed the way they're operating their system. For one, they are no longer storing state water project supplies, and they have temporarily suspended the cyclic program as well as deliveries for our Saboba settlement, as well as deliveries for storage in Diamond Valley Lake. They are leaning heavier into the Colorado River supplies. And having said all that, Diamond Valley Lake is going to end the year, this calendar year, at 90% of capacity. There will be 728,000 acre feet of water stored within Diamond Valley Lake. For us, this year, we have definitely utilized the available surplus water for MET, and we have stored 13,000 acre-feet of surplus water in our groundwater basin. That's both in terms of the Saboba settlement replenishment as well as the cyclic storage programs. So we will continue to monitor events. We are hopeful that later this year there will be an increase in allocation for Metropolitan. They need to see a 30% state water project allocation to be in balance. If that does not occur, Metropolitan is anticipating to utilize as much as 400,000 acre-feet of stored water to meet its demands. If the allocation exceeds 30%, then we will see, again, cyclic program resume as well as storage activities resume. We'll continue to monitor the conditions with MET and report to the board accordingly. Next, I wanted to share with you that on November 21st, Director Armstrong and I participated in the first joint task force for the Climate Adaptation Master Plan for Water. Essentially, this reformatted task force now includes not only board members, but also general managers. Director Armstrong is a member of that task force. I serve as an alternate, but I am planning to attend and fully engage in those conversations at Metropolitan. The meeting that was held on November 21st focused primarily on the charter of the task force, as well as the evaluation criteria that will be utilized. They're developing essentially a decision model framework to be able to evaluate various portfolio of projects that will be considered by Metropolitan for potential advancement and investment. At the AQUA conference, the member agencies of the Inland and Orange County Caucus met and discussed the CAMP process. And as a result of that conversation, we are drafting a comment letter to Metropolitan, ourselves and several members of that caucus. And we are planning on submitting that comment letter by Friday this week, which is a deadline that Metropolitan established for receipt of input. The letter will be very much consistent with a recent letter that we submitted to Metropolitan that pertained to the long-range financial plan and the overall CAMP process. So it will be in the same spirit and the same priorities that we highlighted in that letter. We will continue to reiterate that approach with Metropolitan. Whether we do this individually or collectively with others, we do plan on continuing to provide feedback and comments to Metropolitan as we engage and participate in this CAMP process. So as those activities continue, we will be bringing regular updates to the board. Finally, under items of interest to the board, I know that all the board members did attend the AQUA conference, but I did want to highlight one particular event that occurred, and that was we were recipients of an award and recognition by AQUA for our long-term support as a diamond sponsor. And President Pauly, along with Savvy the Water Drop, were on hand to receive the award at AQUA. And it was really a wonderful recognition of EMWD's longstanding contribution to AQUA. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
Director Armstrong.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. One question on the cyclic storage. Do you know, did any other agencies in Southwest Riverside County participate in that, or was it, or do you know, or just Eastern?
My understanding is Rancho. They did not. I know they did last time.
I don't know if Rancho ever completed their agreement with as when Jake moved on.
I know they were interested.
Yeah, they were interested.
Perhaps.
I'm not sure.
We'll confirm that. I know in the past they did. I'm not sure about this time. We'll confirm that, Director Armstrong. Okay.
And then I just wanted to follow up on your comments on the task force on the CAMP for Water. And I think that the addition of having agency general managers participate and be part of the task force is a real benefit to this task force. I think the input, I think the speed and pace of things will move quicker. It will be a better outcome. And Joe's already been providing great input on it, you know, even on our first meeting. And then I think also to our caucus and our collective sort of thoughts on it, whether we do submit a letter together or if we just do something on our own or wherever that ends up, I do think it's really important that we continue to provide formal comments on it and in a productive spirit like we have. I think that those meetings are so quick and there's just not a lot of time for input. So I think it's really the vehicle to really get our thoughts on it. And so I appreciate, you know, staff's effort on that.
Thank you, Dr. Armstrong. And I will note that when we submitted our letter, our initial letter on the long-range financial plan, we received a lot of positive feedback, both from the Metropolitan team as well as other member agencies who basically echoed our position. So I think there's a tremendous value in us contributing to the discussion and conversations that are being held at Metropolitan.
Any other questions for the general manager? Thank you very much. Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Nothing this morning, thank you.
Nick?
Report today.
Good morning, President Pauley. Nothing for me either.
Matt?
Good morning. Joe already covered, you know, a lot of the recharge status, but I just did want to mention we did complete 2024 pre-deliveries on Monday or Tuesday, and by the time Metropolitan shuts us off on the 1st, you may have something like 1,800 acre-feet pre-delivered for 2025. That's it.
Excellent. Any questions for anybody? All right. Seeing none, we will move on to item 3, which is our consent calendar. Do any members of the board like to ask for additional information or a separate vote on any item? Seeing none, I'll look for a motion by Director Corona. I'm sorry, Director Record.
On the minutes.
All right. We'll note Director Record abstaining on item A of the consent calendar. Second by Director Armstrong. I'll take a roll call vote with Director Record abstaining on item A.
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. We will move on to item 4, which is our action calendar. Item A is to approve and authorize Doheny Ocean Desalination Project cost share agreement with South Coast Water District with an appropriation of $2.5 million.
Good morning again, President Pauley and members of the board. As you are aware, over the last several months, we have been working closely with the South Coast Water District on potential terms and conditions for our participation in the Doheny Ocean Desalination Project. And this morning, I'm very pleased to present you with the terms and conditions that we've defined and ask for your consideration for us to continue this process.
Okay.
All right. South Coast Water District is currently in the process of implementing the Doheny Ocean Desalination Project, and they're implementing the project in phases, with the first phase being defined as a 5 MGD ocean desalination facility. South Coast Water District has identified their needs as being 1 to 2 million gallons per day for their service area, which leaves 3 to 4 million gallons per day available for potential partners. Ultimately, the plant could be expanded to 15 MGD. The plant is located in the city of Dana Point at the existing San Juan Creek property, and the facilities are being sized to accommodate that ultimate expansion to 15 MGD. There were some considerations for how best to mitigate environmental concerns, which has really allowed South Coast Water District to continue to advance this project. One is through intake being through slant wells, and the other being the utilization of the existing San Juan Creek ocean outfall for the brine dilution and disposal. There are a lot of permits and agreements that have already been established and obtained through the last several years through South Coast Water District's efforts. The State Water Board and the San Diego Regional Board have approved the NPDES discharge permit and also has made the determination that the project is in compliance with the ocean plan. There are mitigation measures that have been defined, including minimizing intake and mortality of marine life, the turbulence mortality of incremental brine discharge, as well as an estimate for mitigation property at 7.45 acres. In addition, due to the location of the facility, there's also an agreement with the California State Parks. And through this agreement, there is a collaborative effort to align the project construction with the State Parks Doheny State Beach General Plan implementation. And through that, the project will repair and restore the Doheny State Beach Campground And that includes new water, sewer, electrical hookups, improvements to the pedestrian and bike access circulation, as well as replacing the interpretive area landscape and restrooms. So a community benefit as well. The California Coastal Commission has also issued their conditional approval late last year. There were 16 special conditions that were identified, four of which are listed here. The remaining 12 are definitely more secondary special conditions, but the primary ones are considerations for public coastal access and mitigation for potential loss of coastal camping, energy and greenhouse gas minimization, environmental justice, and low-income ratepayer assistance, as well as tribal consultation and cultural resources. Again, all conditions that South Coast Water District is committing to address. The state lands lease was approved late last year, required an addendum to the final EIR to address the campground modifications that I described on the prior slide, as well as the land lease for slant wells below the mean high tide line and modified lease for ocean outfall. And areas that South Coast Water District will continue to engage in over the full life of the project is the 20-year slant well lease. The state lands has some limitations on how much they will or how long they will grant these leases for. So the term is 20 years, but the expectation is that that will be extended and re-upped at the end of that time period. And then also, again, consideration for greenhouse gas mitigation. South Coast Water District updated the cost of the project in earlier this year with a presentation in summer, comparing the 5 MGD plant cost in terms of unit cost per acre foot to Metropolitan's rate. You can see under different scenarios of assumptions for a metropolitan rate, an escalation rate of 5.3% per year or a high escalation of 6%. And you can also see where the cost per acre foot at project startup estimated in 2028-ish time period crosses over under these two scenarios. But it should also be noted that these escalation rates for Metropolitan are likely low. These rates, even the high rate, does not include some of the initiatives that Metropolitan is currently considering, including Pure Water Southern California, East-West Conveyance, and so forth. This is more of a almost like a do-nothing rate, which we know is unrealistic. So the return on investment and that crossover line is likely even sooner. South Coast Water District has selected a progressive design, build, operate, maintain project delivery. What this does is it really affords certain benefits to both South Coast Water District and any project participants in mitigating risk and securing that fixed final project cost and rate impacts, and as well as allowing for off-ramps and tailoring to the project needs, off-ramps for any project partner. The first phase of this implementation is the procurement. South Coast Water District did issue requests for proposals in the summertime and actually have already shortlisted three design, build, operate, maintain teams. And the next step in that procurement process is issuing requests for proposals to those shortlisted teams, which is anticipated toward the end of this year or early next year. As we have evaluated our involvement in the process or in the project, the cost for EMWD to participate at a 1 MGD level in this first phase 1A of the procurement phase is $600,000. At that point, there will be an off-ramp. If we choose to continue into phase 1B, that will be the preliminary services, and that will be taking the project, the selected design build firm will then advance the design to a level to achieve a 60% design and to reach a guaranteed maximum price. And this, again, will give all of us, all project participants, more information and a firm price and knowledge of what the project is ultimately going to cost. Again, for EMWD's participation at a 1 MGD level, we've estimated this 1B participation as $1,980,000, which includes a 10% contingency on top of what South Coast Water District is estimating for this phase. Phase two will be then the final services. At that time, there will be a separate agreement that is executed. And again, EMWD and all project partners have the opportunity to off-ramp if we choose so. So this overview provides the estimated timeline with, again, the really the advancement of the Phase 1A occurring through now to the beginning of 2024, the development of the 60% design and the guaranteed maximum price for about a year, so into early 2025, and then the advancement to Phase 2 with the design, construction, and operations beginning in 2025 with an estimated online date of 2028. Some of the key considerations for the cost share agreement is an incremental financial commitment. So again, as I mentioned, Phase 1A for EMWD's participation at a 1 MGD commitment is $600,000 to fund the current activities and that development of the procurement documents. The Phase 1B, again, will be that 60% design and the guaranteed maximum price for EMWD's participation at a 1 MGD level is just under $2 million. I also mentioned there are off-ramps after Phase 1A or Phase 1B at EMWD's sole discretion. Some of the considerations for us in establishing those off-ramp opportunities are Metropolitan's establishment of an exchange policy. Today, there is not an exchange policy that exists that would allow us to participate. However, we have been working very closely with Metropolitan and South Coast Water District, the Municipal Water District of Orange County, and other interested parties to establish that exchange framework. And just about 2 weeks ago, we had a meeting with Metropolitan in which they outlined their high-level draft terms and conditions. So they are committed to establishing that policy that would accommodate our participation in this project. One of the other considerations is whether or not this water would afford us the same reliability benefits as a desal project does for specifically for South Orange County. As we won't be getting the wet water, we are interested in what those reliability benefits might look like. And so we have been exploring whether or not this water could qualify for extraordinary supply. We are getting indications from Metropolitan that they are willing to work with us on that, but we'll still need to assess the financial benefits and weigh those between the policy that Metropolitan is contemplating versus the benefits of extraordinary supply for us. We also are going to continue to look at this in terms of our overall portfolio and how this supply compares to our other available supplies, as well as the financial considerations as we continue to understand the ultimate project costs. We will continue to evaluate that in terms of EMWD's participation and comparison to, again, our current and future supplies as well as Metropolitan supplies. And one of the other areas that is still being developed is the partners and the governance structure. So again, as those as that is established, that will also be part of our consideration as to if we recommend an off-ramp at any of those stages. South Coast Water District has also agreed to facilitate additional partners if EMWD exits based upon some of these conditions that I have described. And we've also asked for, and South Coast is accommodating capacity in the future if the project is expanded beyond 5 MGD. Currently, South Coast, as I mentioned, has engaged with partners both in South Orange County, including Laguna Beach County Water District and the City of San Clemente, as well as regional partners, including those here in Southwest Riverside County, including EMWD, and Elsinore Valley is still contemplating a potential partnership as well. The Metropolitan Exchange Policy, as I mentioned, we have been working closely with Metropolitan, MODOC, and South Coast Water District on a framework that would really facilitate our continued participation in the project that would support an inland agency like us or Elsinore or any inland agency participating in the Doheny Desalination Project. But the framework would be more broad than just the Doheny Desalination Project. It would offer opportunities for other agencies that may have supply that they would like to exchange or be able to expand. For example, San Diego County Water Authority, and if they had available ocean desal water that they wanted to exchange with another agency. We feel that this exchange program offers regional benefits it really enhances metropolitan's ability to meet local supply targets, reduces or supports reduced state water project deliveries, and allows the redirection of state water project water for the dependent areas, allows for rebalancing of the region's local supply portfolio, reduces the region's reliance on metropolitan's lowest cost core water, promotes regional equity, and also allows for participation by local agencies that may not have the opportunity to participate or share in reliability benefits on their own. The objective for the exchange policy, from our perspective, is for supplies to both qualify for LRP funding and potentially be exchanged for extraordinary supply benefits. And as I mentioned, Metropolitan is working hard to be able to accommodate both of those both of those goals. At this time, our recommendation is to approve and authorize our general manager to enter into the cost share agreement based on the terms and conditions that we've outlined here, as well as appropriate about $2.6 million to fund EMWD's contribution through the guaranteed maximum price, again, with the available off-ramps should we elect to take those throughout the process. And President Pauly, with your pleasure, before we take questions, I would like to introduce Vice President Scott Goldman from South Coast Water District, as well as General Manager Rick Shintaku. Mark Cerna wasn't able to join us in person, but he is also on the phone, and I'd like to invite Scott.
Absolutely. Please.
Thank you for the introduction and the opportunity to speak to you this morning. This is very exciting for us, for South Coast. We've been working on this project for 20 years. I think 2004 was when it started. It's finally coming together. And for us, this is really a water reliability project. In South Orange County, we're almost totally dependent on Metropolitan. We have a small amount of groundwater. So originally conceived as 2 MGD is the most that really fits well within our water portfolio. The interest that we've been getting and agencies like yours to participate, we can go down to 1 MGD. It really helps secure our system, and we're really happy to have the partnership, especially with the inland agencies like yourself. The policies that Linnea mentioned through Metropolitan is really groundbreaking, I think, within Metropolitan. So this strategic alliance between South Coast and Eastern, and we're really happy to be part of that. This is exciting for us. We're a lot smaller than you. So for us, this is great to be part of. We really appreciate your participation. We also very much appreciate the support that we've received from your board and staff through the process, through the permitting process. Eastern was always there to make some positive comments when we went to the Coastal Commission, Regional Board, State Lands, which is really appreciated on our part. So we're really excited to have you as a partner on the project and look forward to continuing the relationship. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Please.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Thank you for inviting us out here to be a part of this project. I'm looking forward to answering any detailed questions you have, and I have Mark Cerna, our Assistant General Manager, on the phone to answer the tough, detailed questions. So I also wanted to thank you, this board, for your leadership. When Scott said we're smaller than you, we're orders of magnitude smaller than you, but based on my research, we do our business very similarly. We do care about the quality and the reliability of water supplies, and we take that very seriously, and we've been diversifying our portfolio as well. So I think that makes a unique partnership. I looked at our core values, and I think those align as well. And I couldn't be more thankful to your staff for all the support that they provided us. through the permitting process and also with the development of this term sheet. Very good insights that we received. The policy revision, it's groundbreaking, as you know, with Metropolitan, and it gives it's a good step forward to recognizing local supplies, even when they're not local. And I think it's going to be imperative in the overarching reliability of this region. So I applaud your leadership in that category. In regard to the project status, we recently, as Linnea pointed out, completed our shortlisting of qualified teams. We're pleased that we had six submittals there and we could shortlist three. We're working hard on the RFP right now, and we plan to get that out soon after the alignment of these governing board actions. As Linnea pointed out, Laguna Beach County Water District will be considering this item very soon in January. I believe San Clemente as well, and Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District. We're putting the final touches on that. You know, actually, I'm going to stop there, and I did want to just end with, I really look forward to your staff and this board being a part of this project. Not only do I want them at the table helping us making decisions, I think it's necessary, and the experience that your staff has had with these large, complex projects will prove invaluable in the best possible project. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. I will note, while perhaps smaller than Eastern, you do have an unlimited supply of water at your front door. So we appreciate both you being here this morning. Lenny, if you want to come back, I'm going to open it up for board questions and discussion. Director Armstrong?
Yep. Well, I wanted to first just congratulate you on the project and making it as far as you have, and your perseverance. And I mean, I feel like this is going to happen, and so congratulations on that. And also want to compliment you on being inclusive and collaborative, and even to the degree of opening the project to a bigger scale and inviting partners in. I think that's kind of what we all need to be doing in Southern California today, working better together on those things. So appreciate that. And you already mentioned, you know, the exchange framework, but I think there are always these ancillary benefits of things like this that you don't even know what they are yet today, but that's certainly one that's going to help us in Southern California. So that is groundbreaking, and I think it will benefit other member agencies of Metropolitan, not including us. And so it's good to see that happening. But we at Eastern, I think our demands are only half of what our ultimate demands are today, and half of our supply is from Metropolitan and half of it is local supply. And going forward, I think that's the same mix we're trying to hope to achieve in the future. But we need to do something to secure that supply adequacy and resiliency. And you mentioned the Pure Water Project at Metropolitan, and that has a base project cost today of somewhere around $4,000 or over $4,000 an acre foot. So, you know, this is, in comparison to that, this doesn't look so bad. But I think this effort shows a continuation of past decisions by prior boards here at Eastern, and being very innovative, real leadership in the industry. And I think this will be another one of those ones that could potentially fall into that category. So I appreciate that we have the off-ramps that you've developed, and I think that's critical for moving this forward. But I think it's a great progress to this point. I support it, and I would recommend approving it as well.
Any other comments, questions?
I certainly could not add anything to that. I agree with everything you said very well.
Director Record?
Yeah, I have a number of questions. And I agree that I have concerns about Metropolitan going forward, and we need to look at all opportunities to procure other supplies, especially reliable supplies. But we have to be careful about the ultimate cost, and we have to be careful about the viability. So when I see that the Coastal Commission has 16 special conditions, there's only four shown here, and they're troubling enough on their own. I need to understand what those mean. What does it mean that we're going to minimize greenhouse gas. I mean, is there an answer for that? Because it doesn't, it's not very clear.
Very good question, by the way. And Mark Cerna is on board, so he could describe a lot of the other conditions there. But in terms of greenhouse gases, we're obligated to make sure we look at every alternative energy source, and we have been doing that. We dedicated about an acre of that property for alternative energy. We've been looking at fuel cells. We've been looking at other potential landfill gases and others to try to make sure that we reduce the greenhouse gases and are as green as possible moving forward. So that they didn't really. It's what I'm trying to say. These conditions are not onerous. One of the conditions that provide, or I was the most concerned about, was the condition that we were responsible in the 2 years that we're there. So the campsite, Doheny State Campground, is going to be vacated for 2 years so we can drill all of our wells. That's what the state parks wanted. It's pursuant to their general plan that we would improve it because we're touching all of the campground, essentially. But the point was that during that time period, we're responsible for providing alternative campsites. But luckily, the state parks has an abandoned park area that they plan to open up during that time frame. But we're responsible for that, so we're coordinating that closely with state parks. None of the conditions, I believe, are onerous and tough for us to achieve.
Well, it doesn't give me much comfort to say. I mean, I'm not sure what they're expecting. If you're just going to check a box that, yeah, we looked at all energy sources and this is the best one. And that's good enough for the Coastal Commission. If you don't have an answer, that's fine. I'm just trying to get a sense I'm not here to try to beat up the project or anything. I just really want to understand environmental justice. How does that work?
Exactly. So we're not in a disadvantaged community area, but there are areas that we have to be concerned about within our service area. So they wanted to make sure we structure programs. If there's possibilities to reduce the rates in some of these areas, kind of lifeline-type rates, using the proper revenue streams, they wanted us to exhaust that and look through that, and we have been. And we have an idea for the future to assist some of those lower-income areas.
Okay. Well, I don't know what the other 12 are, but, I just want to convey my concern that some of these are so open-ended that it's really subject to the whatever the commission decides at some point. And that leads me to the state lands lease, a 20-year lease. I mean, I don't think that begins to satisfy the life of the project. Mm-hmm. And is there any sort of an option or?
When we went through that process, we were, of course, pursuing a longer-term lease. This was in line with, I guess, their industry standards looking at these type of projects. But they assured us the intent would be for us to come back, much sooner than the 20 years to expand that time period. Our project would be 30-plus years in terms of project life. So we were concerned about that, but they provided that assurance there. I do want, can we ask Mark Cerna to chime in? Because he may have something to add on your greenhouse gas. I don't want to leave that unanswered there. And right now it's escaping me. Mark, if you're available.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Good. Good. Thank you, Director Record, on your questions, and good morning, members of the board. On the greenhouse gas question, that is part of the, again, we had committed to our carbon neutral footprint, and we have done some previous alternative power studies to look at options for the project itself. We realize to get to 100% carbon neutrality is not an easy thing to do. We already have committed to solar and battery storage, and as part of our progressive design build, we will be incorporating that energy component into the progressive design. We expect to have to buy renewable energy credits, RECs, as part of the process, and we've assumed a conservative power supply from the grid from SDG&E, which already has about a 45% renewable credit towards their supplies of energy, and they are committed to meeting a 2045 100% renewable. So it will taper offwards over time, but our greenhouse gas emission report that we would submit to the Coastal Commission director will outline all those details and make sure that we do accommodate their request and the details of their conditions. And as Rick had mentioned, we felt they were fair and not onerous in terms of how they structured them and what they're requesting. We're essentially been submitting some of these, early draft condition packages. For example, we've just completed preparing our low-income ratepayer impact assessment, so environmental justice issues, how we deal with that. Those are being developed concurrently right now as we proceed forward. And some of these will be part of the district's responsibility, and some will be part of the contractor's responsibilities, which we had to work with Coastal Commission staff very closely to ensure they understood this is a design-build project, not a design-bid-build. So we did have to kind of work that with them very closely and carefully so that there wasn't any holdups on the process on how we move forward with our project, because it is a different delivery approach than they're used to. But I think they were very comfortable with what we proposed. So we feel very comfortable and confident that we'll be able to get all of these submittals in. And we feel their staff is in line with what we're envisioning for the future. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Thanks, Mark. Could I chime in? I wanted to add one more point to that. Mark touched on it, solar. We're very fortunate. We own the 11 acres site. That's more than sufficient for a 15 million gallon per day project. We also own 20 acres roughly north of there. So we are dedicating about 5 acres for solar alone out there, and that's going to really help reduce it by maybe up to a third of the energy use there.
Okay, well, I do know that these plants take a lot of energy, so to me that seems daunting to when there's mentioned by two different agencies that, you know, the greenhouse gas aspect of it, and certainly we all want to be as good in that regard as we can, but, I mean, the potential impact to the cost of the water could be enormous. On slide 5, the comparison to the Met costs, where did those numbers come from? Did the Met numbers come from Met, or is that someone else's projection?
So from what we hired, you know, could I go back real quick on the energy concern you have?
Sure.
'Cause I want to make sure that I address that part too. As Mark had alluded to, there's going to be a point where we probably have to purchase credits, and we've done a financial analysis of that. And it is, though it's significant, it's not to the point where it's going to break the back of the project. We're talking, I think, with inflation now, we're looking at about $300,000 roughly per year. So it's not in the category of millions where it's going to significantly impact the unit cost of the project. So I did want to touch on that. But we are trying to reduce that as much as we can there. So that is our option, backup option there. I'm sorry, the metropolitan cost.
The comparison to the Met cost.
Could we put that slide back up on
the screen? Yeah, slide 5.
Yeah. So, as you know, MODOC is our wholesaler. So we work closely with Harvey De La Torre, actually, at MODOC, to derive this. We hired David Moore from Clean Energy Capital Financial Consultants, who worked on this financial analysis, and he actually provided two versions. One that incorporated, this is the most recent version, that incorporated a lot of the energy spikes that we've been seeing at SDG&E, along with inflation and supply chain impacts, and hence the costs had gone up to this amount that you're seeing here. The Metropolitan forecast was basically Harvey and MODOC working directly with Metropolitan staff and their long-term financial plan to derive these estimates.
Well, and as I think Linnea mentioned, there's no Carson plant, there's no East-West conveyance, there's no Delta conveyance. This is very sobering, to say the least.
Okay.
But But I don't understand how the costs for operating Doheny stay less if we're only talking about power and labor and everything else that an agency has. But in, at any rate,
could I touch that answers on that my real question. People have questioned us, how are our unit costs where they are? They imagine it should be higher. Well, I don't want to bring up that slide again, but basically we're fortunate. We own that land in fee, so it's roughly 1,500 feet from the beach there for the treatment plant. And the main water transmission line that serves basically from Irvine, what's called the Joint Regional System, from Irvine all the way down to the north side of Camp Pendleton, actually crosses our site. So a lot of these desal projects spend about a third, maybe even up to a half of their overall costs on the distribution costs. We eliminate that because it's traversing our site there. So there's a number of other financial factors that have lent itself, specifically because this site and the location, the geology of the Doheny State Park. So it's really good. We sonar map there at the state park, at both the day use area and the campgrounds. Then it gets worse as you go south, and it gets a little better down by the county park. So that's another element of good fortune, that the close proximity to our treatment plant site.
Okay. Did you want to say something, Joe? Or?
Sure. I just wanted to add maybe some additional perspective. And Dr. Rector, the questions you're bringing up are excellent questions, and I think they're very appropriate because these are things that we have been examining and contemplating over the past several months as we've engaged in discussions with South Coast. And frankly, these are things we're going to continue to monitor going forward. That is why we have included the off-ramp provisions, meaning that if the cost ultimately, when South Coast gets the guaranteed maximum price, if the economics that we have shown you today don't pencil out, then we're going to reconvene with this board and re-examine our decision. But having said all that, when I look at our future, I believe this is an important strategic project. You know, we are in the highest growing region in the entire state, and it's our obligation to look everywhere, including within our service territory and outside of its service territory, to make sure we have reliable supplies to our current and future customers. This is a strategic initiative. This allows us to not only provide more reliability going forward, knowing the uncertainties on the Colorado River and the State Water Project, but also to send a message. I think to send a message all the way, not only up to Sacramento, but also back to Washington, D.C., that ocean desalination should be part of our water supply solution. We have a very small part of that, but I think it sends a message that if everyone expects us to continue to accommodate growth, ocean desal needs to be streamlined, it needs to be advanced, it needs to be part of the solution. So I see this as more than just a water supply project. I see it as part of our strategic mission to support ocean desalination, frankly, as part of the solution, while we're going to continue to explore our own purified water program, our recycled water program, our desalination program. This is not the solution. This is just a small part of what I believe is our strategic objective. So I believe this is an appropriate next step for us to take. Linnea mentioned this as well, but part of the provisions that we negotiated is that we would have a first right of refusal when the facility is expanded in the future. Given everything that we just talked about at Metropolitan, this could be a competitive source of water supply for us, not knowing where Metropolitan's rates are going. So overall, I think we're hedging our position as far as water supply future, and I fully support staff's recommendation.
Well, you know, without the off-ramps, I don't believe I could support the project. I wish they were sooner. I wish we had a longer lease with the State Lands Commission and, you know, a little more tightening up of what it means for greenhouse gas issues. But, as we said, there's the future for Metropolitan is very questionable as far as what the prices are going to end up being. These are my concerns. I'm one of five board members, and I support my other board members that support this, and I support staff that supports it also. But I want to have answers to these questions sooner than later. I don't want to come up against our off-ramp and not have answers. So, I'll support us going forward, but, you know, with those concerns.
That's very appropriate, Dr. Record.
I I fully agree with Director Record, and the questions you're asking are very good ones. I support this project. I think we are at a time that we need to look at diversifying our water portfolio. And I realize desal has been very controversial in California. Some could argue it hasn't worked out the way others have said it's going to work out. I'm hoping this, as you said, is going to be the model of how we change desal for Southern California. Public agency driven. I want to be a participant. I want to have Eastern at the table in these conversations going forward. I'm too glad we have the off-ramps. I think that's smart business of how we do things. But I look at, as you look at, you know, these numbers, and I don't know if they're correct or not, but, you know, 3 decades from now, I want the board sitting here. You know, Director Slauson will probably be still on the board at that time, but future boards to say, I think those guys made a right decision by putting an ocean desal in our portfolio as this area grows out. So great work by staff. This is an idea that I think in less than a year we've come and gotten to this point. And so thank you to staff for doing it. And any other comments? Would you like to make a motion, Director Director Armstrong?
Yep, I'll move the item.
Second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here today. Appreciate it very much. We will now go on to item B, which is to approve and authorize a memorandum of understanding between Eastern Municipal Water District and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 1436. Approve and authorize an extension of benefits in the Memorandum of Understanding to all EMWD employees and adopt the proposed resolution approving the amended salary schedule and ranges and classification and salary schedule. Mr. Mawad.
Thank you, President Pauly, members of the board. Wanted to share with you today the provisions of a proposed MOU that we have reached tentative agreement on between management and the union leadership, as well as the union membership has voted on this particular MOU. In fact, they recently held an election, and 77% of the eligible union members did participate in the vote, and I'm pleased to share with you that 90% of the vote was in favor of this contract. Wanted to go through the provisions of the contract, the compensation and benefits, as well as policy provisions. Also, there's a handful of items that we agreed that we would continue discussions on that I wanted to also highlight. So as you're aware, the current MOU between the district and IBEW expires end of this month. And negotiations on a new contract started in July. And in mid-October, we were able to reach tentative agreement. As I mentioned, there was recently a union membership vote that approved the new contract. And the contract that we are putting forward for your consideration today is a 3-year contract that would commence on January 1st, 2024, through the end of December.
And Mr. Mawad, apparently we have a technical difficulty and lost the audio, so can we pause
for a
moment while we get that cleared up?
Welcome to Zoom. Enter your meeting ID. Enter your participant ID followed by pound. Other. You have entered the meeting as a panelist. Attendees can now hear you speak. This meeting is being recorded.
Are we back on? All right. Please continue.
So, as mentioned, the proposed contract is a 3-year contract that commences on January 1st, 2024, and extends until the end of December 2026. So, wanted to very quickly run through some of the provisions, including the compensation and benefits provision. We agreed with the union to maintain the current methodology for calculating
the cost of living adjustment. It's a methodology we've used over the last several MOUs. It's rolling average. And based on that methodology that's been used in the past, the current cost of living adjustment based on reported data is 5.3% for 2024. And just as a footnote, we did budget for 5% cost of living adjustment for 2024. Now, in the subsequent 2025 and 2026 years, what we agreed to is a floor and a cap on future COLAs. And we would still use the same methodology to calculate the COLAs, but ultimately there would be a cap of no more than 4% and a floor of no less than 1%. We did also agree to add one floating holiday. Currently, there are two existing floating holidays, and the floating holidays in total will be recognized for an observance of Juneteenth, as well as an observance of Cesar Chavez, as well as Columbus / Indigenous Peoples Day. We also have agreed upon a graduated allotment of the floating holidays, depending upon when a new hire is brought on board, depending upon what month in the year they would get proportional number of floating holidays. And then the other thing that we are streamlined, in the past, our practice has been that employees would get either New Year's Eve in the afternoon off or New Year's half a day off, subject to the general manager's approval. That's just never been formalized, and some employees will take half a day on this day or the other. We decided to formalize that and streamline it, and we decided that we're going to close the offices Christmas Eve in the afternoon. And those employees that work that day, meaning they would have to work in the morning, they would get the afternoon as a holiday. If they have to work that afternoon, meaning they are at a plant or somewhere where they are not able to take the time off, then they will get credited that half a day. In terms of deferred compensation, as you know, we do have a deferred compensation program to help our employees position for their retirement. What we have always recognized is that the Tier 3 and Tier 2 employees don't have the same level of benefits as our classic employees or the Tier 1. So we're not proposing any changes to the Tier 1 employees' compensation, deferred compensation, and about half of our employees are in that category. But the other half do reside in the Tier 3 and Tier 2. And for those, we are increasing deferred compensation. For Tier 3, it will increase from 5% to 6%. For Tier 2, we are proposing to increase that from 4% to 4.5%. Bereavement pay, we looked at the request from the union and looked at other agencies and what they have accommodated their employees. And we believe it's appropriate that when someone has to travel more than 500 miles for such a event, then they would be allotted one additional day to travel back and forth. Tuition reimbursement, this has been an important program of supporting our employees to gain additional knowledge and skills to help them with their job duties. Currently, under the current contract, we provide $5,250 at 90% of the cost. We're proposing to increase that to $6,000. And that $6,000 would be adjusted annually based on CPI. Safety shoe allowance, I think we all recognize there's been escalation and inflation and all commodities have increased in cost. That $200 for shoe allowance has been in place for many years. Looking at the current pricing of safety shoes, we believe it's appropriate to increase that to $275 and then on a going forward basis adjust that based on COLA increases. Also, extended overtime, we have agreed that those employees that work more than 12 hours in a workday, and those are typically emergencies where someone has to respond in the field to a line break or other situations. If they're working more than 12 hours, currently they get compensated at 1.5. We are proposing to increase that to 2 times their salary. Again, that is consistent with other member agencies that we've looked at in our region. And we've also looked at the required rest period, and we believe that if someone has less than 2 hours remaining in their regular shift, then they will go ahead and identify those remaining 2 hours or less as part of their rest period, meaning they're not going to have to come back to the office for the remaining hour or whatever it may be. And we also did adjust the on-call per diem to be consistent with the IRS guidelines for Riverside County. and we will reimburse employees at the dinner rate, but the maximum daily rate will still be per the IRS guidelines for Riverside County. Under policy provisions, shifting a bit, we did agree with the union that employees that are at control point and who in their more recent evaluation did meet or exceed expectations, they will have the option to defer their annual review for 1 year. We believe that is a flexibility that should be provided to the employee if that's what they choose. Attendance, we did negotiate that. Currently, if someone is absent, an event is could be more than 1 day. We decided to make sure that the occurrence is defined as one workday or one tardy, meaning it's not multiple days of unexcused absences. It's one workday. Recruitment and selection, as the board is aware, we currently are very much supportive of a number of programs to bring in interns and youth ecology temporary workers and other volunteers and fellows, and we believe it's important to be able to have access to those individuals and for them to be able to compete whenever we have openings at the district. Right now, they are considered as external to the district, but with this new MOU, those category of interns and temporary employees would be considered as internal and would be able to compete along with other internal candidates for openings. We've also provided some additional flexibility. We recognize that we need to fill vacancies in a fairly rapid manner, so we've agreed that, for example, if we've advertised for a position in the last 12 months and we haven't been able to find qualified internal candidates, that we would be able to advertise externally, internally at the same time. And also, this new contract gives the general manager some latitude based on specific vacant positions that need to be expedited for filling. And I could make the decision to advertise both in-house and external concurrently. Union membership, we will be providing that new employees will be eligible to join the union upon hire rather than the one-year wait period that's currently in place. Telecommuting, modification to that policy that's been in place for the last few years. Essentially, employees will be able to telecommute up to 2 days a week or 4 days within a work period. Currently, it's 3 days within a work period. The program has worked well, and it is a pilot program, so management does have the prerogative at some point in time. We need to make changes, and obviously we can revisit that. Promotions and reclassifications, again, sometimes we recognize as we bring in individuals from other agencies or within the organization, we want to be competitive relative to the compensation adjustment. So the GM has the authority under this new contract to provide more than 5% increase at appointment for a promotion or reclassification. And then those employees that were previously at control point in their prior position prior to being reclassified or promoted, will be eligible for 5% merit increase, and they will also be eligible for an appraisal at their next review period. Pay time off, employees will be eligible to use accrued time off upon hire rather than the 90-day waiting period. There's a handful of items that we and the union decided to continue discussions on, and one is to continue to look at market options for available plans for dental vision and short-term disability. We want to make sure that what we offer the employees in terms of those plans is the highest value and most competitive in terms of cost to the employee. So we'll be working with our HR department to look at what other plans or options that may be made available to the employees for consideration. Also, we want to make certain that we continue to reinforce our safety culture here at EMWD. So what we agreed to with the union is to continue discussions about how can we accomplish that via our performance review and potentially enhancements to the performance review process for the employees. Also, we want to make sure we're always enforcing the need for fatigue awareness among employees. If we have employees who are working extended hours and if they feel that they're too tired to drive home after being in the field for an extended period of time, we want to make sure we're informing our employees that they should let us know so we can drive them home or arrange for them to be driving home rather than being on the road after working long hours. So that fatigue awareness policy and training is something that we're going to continue discussions about with the union. And then also, we will monitor our industry regarding any potential future incentives or recognitions for employees who are ineligible to work from home. As you know, a good portion of our employee workforce, more than half, work in the field, and they do not have the ability to participate in the work from home. But we will continue to monitor if there's something else that may be something for our consideration in the future. So the last, second to last slide is the financial impact. As you can imagine, what's really driving the financial impact is the cost of living adjustment. And for the first year, it's calculated at $6.5 million or 5.1% of the total wages and benefit. As mentioned, we had previously included 5% in our budget. For the second and third year, assuming a 3% COLA, we'll see where the numbers come in, but assuming that 3% COLA, the numbers are presented at $4.3 million and $4.2 million, respectively. The unbudgeted impact for the current year is $639,000, which we can absorb given the current vacancies that we are experiencing. And then for 2024, 2025, it's $700,000. The remaining term of the contract, meaning 25-26 through the end of the calendar year 26, we'll be incorporating the financial considerations as part of the next biannual budget that we will be bringing forward to the board. So our recommendation is for the board to approve the new MOU contract with IBEW that will commence starting January 1st of 2024 through the end of 2026 and extend the terms and provisions outlined in the MOU to all employees, including non-represented employees. With that, myself, and by the way, I just want to acknowledge the entire senior executive team that was on the negotiating team, including HR and our new director. They did an amazing job in supporting the effort to bring it to fruition. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions, Director Slauson.
I think it looks like a great agreement. One question, the probationary period for a new hire, how long is that?
That is 1 year.
1 year? Okay.
1 year probationary period, yes.
Okay, then I had one other question. Did the union leadership request the fatigue awareness training after the 20th meeting with Laura?
That's a good question. But, you know, fortunately, they were in the office, so they didn't have to get on the road.
No, it sounds good. Good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Director Armstrong?
The employees already voted on this?
Yes.
And did you share what the results of that was? Was it
support? They were 90% supportive, 90% in support of the new contract, 10% in opposition. I believe about 77% of the union members that are eligible to vote did participate in that vote.
Okay. Well, I think this is a really good outcome for both the district and the employees, and I support it. But the one comment I want to make, I know today's our luncheon, right? And I just want to thank all the employees for their hard work, and it very much appreciated and recognized their commitments and their efforts. And to your general manager comment at the beginning, it's a dangerous job out there. There's a lot of risks out there that our employees take on, and I don't think everybody in the public really knows, you know, how risky some of those things are. Getting in a trench, a water line, you're down there, and it opens up, and the pressure that you're dealing with, and the treatment plants that, you know, there's just so much. And so I'm actually glad that you're addressing some of these safety awareness and even incorporating it better into a performance evaluation. I think the more we get our hands around all of that, the better and safer it is for all the employees.
Thank you, Dr. Armstrong. I agree.
Absolutely. We do have two public comment requests on this item, so if we could go to those now. We will start with Robin Clayton, please. Welcome.
Good morning, President Pauly and Board. My name is Robin Clayton. I am the Business Manager President of Local 1436, our union. I want to thank you for taking this into consideration. It's been a long road, and we dealt with a lot of stuff in negotiations. I want to thank upper management for listening to us and hearing our concerns, as well as us being educated during this process with our new human resource manager, director. But on a personal note, I've worked here for 28 and a half years. I will be retiring at the end of this month as an employee, because I am an employee as well. I couldn't ask for a better place to work. I am so proud of this place, and it will be missed tremendously. You guys are my family, and I remember, I just want to point out, and this is coming from me as an employee, that one of the most memorable things is when the board would walk through the district. I remember President Hall walking through the district, as well as Director Sullivan, and just getting to know the employees. I ask you guys, give some of these employees that memory as well, because it doesn't cost a bit, and it really means a lot to the employees to show that they are important. So with that, I will conclude, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next request for public comment is Brian Rattins. Brian?
Good morning, President Pauly, Vice President Corona, and the MWD Board of Directors. We thank you for your review, consideration, and approval of our new contract memorandum of understanding with the IBW Local 1436 and management for the next 3 years. Due to the COVID pandemic, we have not had formal contract negotiations for nearly 4 years. Having just finished our last contract negotiations in March 2020, as the pandemic was shutting down businesses, in-person classrooms, entertainment, sit-down restaurants, and non-essential facilities, while straining our medical facilities, personnel, and frontline public safety servants. We are also essential workers at EMWD. And we are committed to keeping the same, if not better, service to our local residents and essential businesses. At the request of our previous general manager, our team agreed to just maintain our current benefits by extending our current contract for 2 more years to provide some stability to cost to operate this agency through the middle of the pandemic. Up until the contract negotiations this year, we continue to make sacrifices as the cost of everything grew substantially through the pandemic. We appreciate your honoring the contract extension for COLA, medical, and differential pays through the period. We also appreciate you recognizing the additional cost benefit of safety boots, bereavement, deferred compensation, tuition reimbursement, extended overtime hours, and overtime meal per diems. As the anticipated retirements come over the next few weeks, months, and year for those who are in that season of their life, we understand and support the need for the district to be able to recruit, select, and retain replacements in a timely manner from a broader range of internal and external candidates. Having a flexible telecommuting option for eligible positions, providing personal time off as accrued, floating holidays as hired, ensuring eligibility for merit increases occur annually for those gaining experience and independence in their new positions, and continuing to expand eligibility for programs like the Youth Ecology Corps and student workers will assist in filling these positions with qualified and experienced new workers to the industry. Finally, we recognize that there are some areas that we could not come to agreement on or address in a timely manner during this contract negotiations. We appreciate the board's consideration for management to have continuing discussions on fatigue awareness, safety practice, and performance recognition, potential improvements to dental, vision, and short-term disability programs, and looking for opportunities to recognize essential employees whose job responsibilities make them ineligible to telecommute. Thank you for your time and fiscal responsibility in serving our mutual employees and customers.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. I would like to, I'd like to make the motion on this, but before I do, I would like to recognize our Director of Human Resources who came to this district, 6 months ago, and hit the ground running on this. So thank you, and also thank our union partners for working through all this. And with that, I will make the motion to approve. We will second by Vice President Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And the motion passes 5-0. Thank you all again for that. Why don't we take about a 5-minute break? Will we reconvene? Sorry, are we ready to reconvene? One moment. I got ahead of myself there. Okay. Always wait for the producer and the director of the show to. All right, we will reconvene. We will go to item C this morning on our action calendar, which is to approve and authorize award of contracts for SEMA Construction Incorporated for $3.4 million and Converse Consultants for $166,000 under specification number 1508W for the construction of the Los Alamos Hills Waterlines Project, an additional appropriation in the amount of $4.3 million. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. My name is Gustavo Gomez. I work in our engineering department, and I'm here today to present our recommendation to award the construction contract for the Los Alamos Hills Water Pipelines Project. Also with us this morning are Brian and Eric, representing SEMA Constructors.
Thank you, gentlemen, for being here this morning. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, thank you for coming. So, to provide some background, this project is located in the city of Murrieta's Los Alamos Hills neighborhood and addresses water production challenges resulting from declining private well levels during the drought. To address these concerns, the city of Murrieta partnered with the district to help these residents and provided $3.2 million in ARPA funds to the district for a water pipeline project that benefits this neighborhood. This project therefore aims to enhance water reliability for these residents by establishing a looped water system that is accessible to property owners who annex into the district's service area. The proposed pipelines will be installed along Los Alamos Road, Ruth Ellen Way, Celia Road, Mary Place, and Mason Road, and consist of about 6,700 feet of 8-inch diameter pipe and 5,000 feet of 12-inch diameter pipe. In September, staff advertised the project and received a total of 5 bids. Among the bidders, SEMA Construction emerged as the lowest responsive and responsible bidder with a bid amount of approximately $3.5 million. To maintain consistency and continuity with the project, staff reached out to Converse Consulting, the project's geotechnical engineer, and Webb and Associates, the project's engineer of record, to negotiate a scope and fee for geotechnical observation and testing during construction, as well as engineering and field survey services during construction. The negotiated fee for engineering and surveying services is approximately $71,000, which is appropriate for the level of effort required to complete the work. If the board approves, we will begin construction for this project as soon as possible. The construction activities are anticipated to be completed by December of next year, which is well in advance of the ARPA funding deadline. With that, our recommendation today is to advance a contract with SEMA Construction, Converse Consultants, and Webb Associates to proceed with the construction phase of this project. Advance administrative award of other ancillary contracts that may be necessary to complete the work, and the additional appropriation of approximately $4.3 million to fund project costs. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions you may have.
Questions on this? Remind me, have we done business with SEMA Construction in the past?
We have not.
So if it's their first time, gentlemen, you want to come up and quickly introduce your firm to us? We just like to know a little about who we're working with.
President Pauly, members of the board, thank you for having us. We're with SEMA Construction. We're a firm out of Colorado. We have 4 districts, Texas, California, Colorado, and Florida. Annual revenue, roughly $400 million a year.
Good.
But we're excited about this contract, ready to perform. Being that that's our first with you, we're looking to show you who we are and what we can do. So,
very good. Appreciate you being here. Look forward to doing business with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll move the item.
Moved by Director Corona, second by Director Slauson. Sullivan.
Sullivan.
Slauson. I apologize. Could I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye. Passes 5-0. Was that, is this your first presentation before the board?
Second.
Second. All right. Did a great job. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Approve and authorize. Item D is to approve and authorize the addition of funds for an as-needed capital improvement program developed for project inspection services for a revised not to exceed total of $3.4 million. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. So as you know, the engineering branch utilizes contracted inspection services to perform both CIP and developer-based construction inspection. Those contracts were last awarded, those as-needed contracts were last awarded and approved by the board in June of 2022, and we have four of those as-needed service agreements under agreement. So with these, task order-based assignments are issued less than $100,000. Anything greater, any project greater than $100,000 would go to the board for approval. Expenditures under those four agreements since the contracts were approved in June of 2022 have been higher than anticipated, primarily due to strong ongoing development activity as well as our pretty robust CIP program. Through October of this year, we've spent $2 million out of the $2.4 million that was approved by the board, and we have about 8 months remaining in that contract term. Our engineering branch is recommending the addition of $1 million to support those contracts through expiration at the end of the current term in June of 2024. And projects that will be worked on by these under these contracts include the Paris North Pipeline Phases 2 and 3, Reno Valley Pavement Restoration Project, State Street Pipeline Replacement, Cactus 2 Feeder, and many others. So with that, it is recommended that the board approve and authorize the addition of $1 million to the category of the as-needed inspection services, bringing the total cost not to exceed amongst all firms in that category to $3.4 million. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Motion by Director Slauson.
I'll second.
You can second. Director Cronus seconds. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Cronus?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. That will bring us to item 6, which is our receive and file various reports. I will make a motion to do so. Director Armstrong?
Second.
Second it. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. That will bring us to our calendar review. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Excuse me. This morning I have quite a few events for your review and consideration. Beginning with December 14th is the Metropolitan Water District Poster Recognition event. This event will be virtual, so we will need to have RSVP submitted so we can get the link to participate in that. Friday, December 15th is the City of Lake Elsinore Water Media Event in Lake Elsinore, Launch Point. Thursday, February 8th through February 9th is the Cal DeSalle 2024 Annual Conference in Sacramento. Wednesday, February 21st through Friday, February 23rd is the Urban Water Institute Spring 2024 Conference, and that will take place in Palm Springs. Wednesday, February 28th through Friday, March 1st, is the Multi-State Salinity Coalition 2024 Summit in Las Vegas. And Monday, March 11th through Thursday, March 14th, is the Water Reuse 2024 Symposium in Denver, Colorado. Detailed information regarding these events is also located within your packets. Turning to page 2 is the current listing of the board members' master calendar for the next 2 weeks. If you could please review the information and let me know if you have any updates or changes. Next, we have on top of page 3 is the list of upcoming events with participants, and that is Friday, December 15th, is the Riverside County Water Task Force Annual Forum, which also includes a tour of Diamond Valley Lake. For this event, I do want to point out that check-in is 8:30 here at EMWD Boardroom, and the bus for Diamond Lake will depart sharply at 9 a.m. Continuing on page 3 is the board and board committee meetings. Please note that the February Administrative Committee meeting has been rescheduled to Thursday, February 8th at 7:30 a.m. All other meetings through February are on schedule. On page 4 is the interagency meetings, all on schedule. We do have one board member that is out of the office December 25th through December 31st. And EMWD offices will be closed on the following holiday schedules. And those are December 25th, January 1st, January 15th, and February 19th. Are there any questions or comments regarding the calendar review?
None. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. With that, we will go to director's attendance reports, and we will start with Director Armstrong.
Okay. The metropolitan meetings were pretty much generally covered under our general manager's report. One other meeting, though, was the audit subcommittee meeting where we essentially reviewed the audit report from the external auditors. The Cal-DSAL committee meeting was held at the AHCA conference, and that association just is kind of just slowly improving, both on their fiscal position as well as sort of their efforts, and including growing their membership, and so it's doing really well. Update with the general manager, and then, of course, the AHCA conference. I thought it was a really good conference. I thought it was fairly well attended as well. I attended the Colorado River sessions. First one was Colorado River 101, and I think these sessions get posted online too later on, but that was a really good overview of the history of all the PACs and agreements on the Colorado River. And I thought the chair of the Colorado River Board, J.B. Hamby from, I think, Imperial Irrigation District, did a really good job of explaining it all really well. And so if you're interested in wanting to learn more about it and the history about it, it's worth watching it, I think. So I thought that was really good, and I also attended the session on the voluntary agreements as well on the State Water Project, and thought that was really educational too. But I thought it was a good conference, and that's my update.
Thank you very much. We will go on to Director Corona.
Yes, I also attended AHCA, and it was a really good conference. I was particularly interested. I went to the Ag Committee, and they had a couple of people on there. First one was these folks that predicted the weather. And, I mean, you look out over the ocean, you're like, there's nothing's coming, you know. But these folks have predicted the last 7 years in a row to be spot on, even predicting last year's late wet season. So, you know, hopefully they'll be correct this year. The other one was in that committee was the discussion about how much water ag and residential actually use, if you count the entire amount of water that falls on California and how much is really going to environmental use. And it's like 200 million acre feet of water falls on, it's available to be used in California. And when it comes down to it, only about 12% of that is used by ag and 3% is used by urban, and the rest of it goes for environmental uses. And everyone focuses on the ag and and they don't focus on the environmental use of it. And I thought that was very interesting. But all in all, it was a very good conference. Myriad, I didn't go to the Murrieta Temecula group meeting, and did have a meeting yesterday with Pakal and Nick and discussed tomorrow's LAFCO meeting. There is an effort, I guess, to change how the timing of the voting of the nomination periods and the voting and extending those out, and so that's going to be an interesting topic tomorrow, only for special districts. So we'll see how that goes. And that's all I have.
All right, very good. I did attend for the district the Western EMWD joint meeting. Always good information there. Joe and Craig do a very good job of informing the members on things relative to both agencies. Aqua Conference has mentioned a lot of good presentations, a lot of good seminars. As you saw earlier, we had our guest, our water drop. Savvy the Water Drop was there.
Was jealous.
I'm sure Patrick was jealous. That may be in the future. But anyway, I thought overall well attended and a good conference. Had a good update the other morning with Laura, and she brought our HR director along, which was a very good discussion just on some employee things and what we've already discussed today. So that was very helpful. And WRCOG kind of had an update on RCOG and some potential regional energy grants coming to the Inland Empire and quarterbacking that and sorting it out through local governments. But our region's applying for some local state and federal energy grants that could be helpful in advancing electric vehicles, et cetera. So it's my report. Director Record.
So update with General Manager. So good. Aqua Conference. I thought the Ag Committee meeting was one of the best that they've had, and I usually enjoy them. But that presentation by the State Farm Bureau on who uses the water, it's just what's so enlightening is there's no requirement for environmental entities to say this is what we use and this was beneficial and this. It's just it's too bad. Also went to the Groundwater Committee meeting, and Colorado River 101 was very good. I'm very impressed with J.D. Hamby, and caught part of the voluntary agreements and had some good side meetings, including Ocean Well, which is an interesting meeting, and I'm curious if they're having any contact with the Doheny project and if that might have any impact on how that project rolls out. So,
I think, Dr. Record, you're right. It was a really good conversation with Tim Quinn and others. Thank you for arranging for that. I think there is one nexus between the Ocean Well concept and the Doheny, and that's what we mentioned earlier today is this framework for member agencies within Metropolitan to potentially invest in other regions, local resources. And I think Ocean Well Technology, as they advance their pilot with Las Virgenes Municipal Water District, and we're very much supportive of that pilot, we're eager to see the results. But if they do ultimately implement the project and if it comes to fruition, they will potentially benefit from this policy that we have led the discussion on at Metropolitan, where agencies like us or others in the region could potentially participate in that type of project. So I think there's a nexus between that project and Doheny. I think Ocean Well Technology still is in the demonstration pilot stage, so that there's still some work to be done before it could be further confirmed in terms of economic investment needs and other permitting needs. So there's still some work to be done by Ocean Well Technology before they get to a point where they've demonstrated their financial viability.
All right. Director Slauson.
Yes, I attended the joint meeting with Western and discussed issues of mutual concern. Attended SAPA on the November 21st. We approved an update to our personnel handbook and authorized general manager to issue an RFP for a new compensation and classification study. Attended the AQUA conference, went to learn more about the Colorado River, and went to the ethics training, and attended SAPA on the 5th of December, and we authorized the general manager to extend a contract with West Coast Advisors, our state legislative services provider, and we approved a resolution in memoriam for Commissioner Kelly Rowe, who passed away. And he was a member of SAPA and a member of the, Orange County Water District.
All right. Thank you for that. Do we have any director's comments or future agenda items? Director Record.
Just one comment related to the Doheny discussion today. And I don't know if anyone's actively doing outreach and trying to sign up other agencies, but I would hope that they don't say, well, Eastern's on board. They're, you know, because we have things we still want to figure out. So anyway, I just want to make that comment that there are some entities that will go unnamed here that would really like to have Eastern on board because, you know, I don't want this to sound arrogant, but we're a really good agency. So
agreed.
It is not arrogance.
Yeah. All right. With that, I'll ask legal counsel if we need a closed session.
We do, Mr. Chair, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, discuss one item of existing litigation, and pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 to discuss public employment issues.
All right. We will switch over to closed session then.
Hey, Randy, how does the water from the ocean?
All right. Very good. We are back out of closed session. I'd like to have legal counsel report out of closed session, please.
President, the board met in closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss one item of existing litigation, San Diego County Water Authority versus Eastern Municipal Water District. A report was given to the board and instruction was given to staff. No formal action was taken by the board. The board also met pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 to discuss personnel matters. In particular, succession planning. A report was given to the board. No formal action was taken by the board. That concludes my closed session report.
Very good. With that, we stand adjourned until December 20th at 9 a.m.